my name is Jake.
My name is Jake.
that sounded like a porno.
My name Jake.
My name is E.T.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to the Four Corners Crime Cast. My name is Jake.
My name is Rory.
And I'm your host, Katie. And today we're going to be talking about David Parker Ray, better known as the Toy Box Killer.
This guy is just so fucked up. I'm just saying, it's fucked up. Shit's fucked up.
Thank you, Rory.
You guys have the giggles.
Hot takes coming from Rory.
My professional assessment of this dude is fucked up.
Let me see. If I go back and think about all the people so far that we've talked about, they're all fucked up.
Yeah, but this guy, he honestly takes the cake in my book. Since I heard about him, he is the most brutal person. I mean...
Well, I have not heard anything about it yet, but even over the baseline?
Oh, definitely over the baseline.
Oh, shit.
All right, Katie, kick us off.
All right. So we are going to Truth or Consequences, New Mexico. T or C is a very small town. It's only 12.8 square miles. And for reference, Tucson is 226 square miles.
Wait, how much did you say it was?
12.8.
Oh, okay. So it's a little tiny place.
Teeny tiny. Its population...
Tucson is 200 square miles?
226.
Damn. I knew this place was, like, huge, but...
It still seems small.
It's pretty small. I mean, compared to, like, Phoenix or something, but it's still... For how little you think Tucson is, it's not that little, I guess.
Hmm.
Okay, go on. Sorry. Truth or Consequences is small.
Its population is around 6,500 people, and 5 miles north of Truth or Consequences is Elephant Butte.
Elephant Butte.
I left a pause in here specifically for you guys to make butt jokes, so go ahead. Get them out.
I was going to say, do you think it smells like...
What the fuck?
Do you think it smells like a whole bunch of African grasslands over there? Because of elephant farts, that's not a good joke.
That was a bad one. I thought there was going to be a good one.
Katie says that there's a space here for... Childish jokes doesn't mean you have to enter.
Elephant butt in New Mexico. Smells like grasslands of Africa. Not a good joke.
Not really.
Okay.
Does it look like a butt?
It looked like an elephant.
So, yeah.
Oh. How about the trunk?
Well, it's Elephant Butte, not butt. So it makes sense that it looked like an elephant. Like a butte. Shaped like an elephant.
Not even sure what that refers to. I would think it would have to have a trunk to look like an elephant. I'm fairly certain I've seen it, too. I just can't remember.
Yeah, we've been to Truth or Consequences. Not together. Separately.
Oh, yeah. Something like that.
And what was your impression of Truth or Consequences when...
Meth.
Meth? Jake?
I don't remember.
Don't remember? My impression, having no information about it, not knowing anything about it except for its name... I guess it's a pretty shitty place.
So Elephant Butte is a man-made reservoir, and it's surrounded by a state park.
Where did it get its name? Why did they call it Elephant Butte? Does it look like an elephant? Is it?
I think we just went over this.
We did, yeah. All right, let's move on to David Parker Ray's life.
We gotta stick with this. Where are we going with this? What about Elephant Butte, Katie?
That's it. That's literally all that it is. It's a state park. It's a fucking lake.
Why? But I still don't understand why it's called Elephant Butte.
Because it was named after a lake that looked like an elephant, and then they made a reservoir, and they named it Elephant Butte.
See, I still want to know if it had a trunk.
Yeah, I don't know. We can look a picture up.
Yeah, we'll put a picture up for so people know when they listen to the episode.
Yeah.
Okay, Katie. Sorry about that. Truth or Consequences. Elephant butt. Not a great place to be.
Butte. Nope.
Butte. Butte. Elephant butte.
Booty?
Butte. It's French.
All right. So.
It means shaped like elephant lake, but nobody said that, so now I'm stupid. All right, go on. Sorry.
Are we good?
Yeah, we're good.
All right. David Parker Ray was born on November 6, 1939 in Baleen, New Mexico.
How far is that from Truth or Consequences?
It's like 20-ish miles, I believe. So his father, Cecil, was an alcoholic who regularly beat David, his sister Peggy, and their mother, Nettie. When David was 10, Cecil moved to Albuquerque and his parents divorced. Nettie decided against caring for her two children, so she sent them to live with their grandparents.
In Truth or Consequences?
They were in Boleen still.
Boleen.
Bellin. She just sent them away? I'm not sure how to say it.
Well,
someone will tell us if I'm wrong.
Yeah.
She wanted to go party?
Basically. She was going. I mean, she couldn't take care of two kids in 1939 by herself, so.
Well, she should have just Casey Anthony'd the whole thing.
She probably should have.
She should have, yeah. That's definitely true.
Save everybody a whole lot of problems.
Yeah, a little psychological trauma, but let's continue on with David Parker Ray.
During this time, his truck driver father would sometimes pop up to see children. He would usually bring S&M porno magazines for David that he picked up in shops on his travels. These helped David form his sexual perversions for sadism and torture.
Oh, because you know trucker porn is probably the most hardcore thing out there.
This guy was such a nice father.
I imagine that some of these people were not willing participants. They probably just, you know, have their weird trucker meetings where they beat a hobo to death and stuff like that on film.
Pretty much. They were magazines. But it's like snuff film. Along with his constant exposure to pornography, David also claims he got almost no love or affection during his childhood. This sort of proves how important nature versus nurture is during childhood.
So he was just his own thing, running around looking at S&M magazines?
Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
David and Peggy's grandparents were also strict, fundamentalist Christians, and made sure to instill their beliefs in their grandkids.
So you know something about that, Jake. What's that like?
I don't think we're going to go down that.
This probably also played some role in his perversions. Those who grow up being taught sex is dirty and a sin usually form some sort of strange relationship with it.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah?
Definitely.
Okay.
There are all sorts of hang-ups people have about sex.
Throughout his school years, David was bullied for being shy and awkward, especially around girls. Supposedly, during this time, he was strongly against violence. That is, until age 12, when he begins making and setting off bombs in the woods behind his home. Then, at age 15, David makes his first torture dungeon under a pine tree. He placed a hangman's noose and broken bottles around it. He also says that whenever he got too lonely, he'd dig a hole in the ground and fuck it.
Is that a hole? I guess it's still a snake hole. Why don't you just find a snake hole?
Yeah, but the thing is, it's dirt. Did you, like, spit in it first or what? Like, you're just going to rub dirt on your dick and that's going to get you off?
This dude at work today told me how to make a fifi.
Is that, like, some sort of prison vagina?
Yeah.
Okay. Is that, like, the latex glove one?
Yeah.
Okay.
How do you know so much about it, Katie?
I've heard it somewhere.
He's like, I always end up having to explain these things to people at my jobs. Like, I had to explain to this one person what a fifi was. And I looked at him, and I was like, what the fuck is a fifi? And then he explained to me how it's intricate with its folding processes and how you blow, and then you fill it up with whatever, microwave it. It's definitely a...
At least he isn't digging holes in the dirt and fucking them, like David Parker Ray.
Or killing women.
Or killing women. Well, we don't know. This dude's fucking latex gloves and shit. All right, Katie.
While it's unproven, David says it's around this time in the 1950s, probably around age 16, that he commits his first murder. He tied up a young woman to a tree and tortured her before killing her.
Just like how he had set up before? Or is it some sort of other type of torture, do you know?
No, it didn't say, because he basically was like, yeah, I killed someone in the 50s. But nobody has any fucking idea if he actually did it.
Starting early, but I mean, with a trucker father giving you S&M porno at age 12 and you developing a weird sexual habit at a young age, you know, I'm not going to say weird. I'm not fetish shaming if you're an adult and don't murder women. Otherwise, it's weird.
So after high school, David worked as an auto mechanic and he married his first wife at age 20. A year later, in 1960, he joins the army and is sent to Korea. He has to come home on emergency leave after finding out his wife is leaving their baby at home alone while she goes out to party.
Ooh, repeating the cycle.
Yeah.
He found his mother and married her, and guess what happened?
They get divorced, and David is honorably discharged. In 1962, David marries his second wife and divorces her 60 days later when they don't click. 4 years later, in 66, David marries again and has a daughter, Jessie Ray. And her real name was Glenda.
Real name, Glenda Jessie Ray?
No, I can't remember Glenda what her Ray. Middle name was, but it was Glenda something Ray, and she went by Jessie, because nobody wants to go by Glenda.
Was she the one that kind of looks a little manly?
100% manly. She does not look like a woman in any way, shape, or form.
I think she's Stevie Ray Vaughan's child.
I think someone tried to cook a batch of crack, and they just fucked it up so bad that she came out of it.
Came crawling out of the...
After Jesse Ray is born, they are married for 15 years, and David gets divorced a third time. So by 1997, David is living in Elephant Butte, working as an auto mechanic for the state park. During this time, he meets his fourth love and soon-to-be accomplice, Cindy Hindy.
So
he's a butt mechanic.
He is. That's a terrible way to describe the toy box killer because... He literally worked on women like they were cars. It's awful. Why did he keep getting divorces? Like, do you have a list of as to why each one of these women divorced him? Was he just too kinky, too weird, just all around not a good guy, broke?
Unequivocal differences.
Probably all of the above. They never said because I don't think they ever wanted their names spoken in regard to him. So I think he was probably too kinky and had just weird stuff going on in the bedroom they didn't want to be a part of.
I can understand that.
Yeah, they just like come home from work and he's in there with a welder or a fabricator making these contraptions.
Yeah, he probably did a lot of that himself, I'm guessing. Like,
I'm out of here.
Cindy was staying in Elephant Butte after a warrant for her was put out for grand theft, forgery, and drug charges for meth. They soon move in together and begin working on the toy box.
So dun, dun. She's a wanted felon.
Mm-hmm.
And she's staying with this guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she broke up with her boyfriend who she committed all the crimes with that her warrant was out for. And then moved in with David Parker. Right.
Now, so she's kind of a criminal already. Now it's just kind of one step later that she becomes a murderer. Torturer.
Basically.
Okay.
David and Cindy spent over $100,000 on creating the perfect torture chamber. Next to their small rundown home, a 15 by 25 foot white cargo trailer was filled to the brim with every sex toy and torture device imaginable.
Where did they get $100,000 for this shit?
He worked for the state. He was a state park mechanic, so he made good money. He also worked as a mechanic for the army, so I'm sure they paid him.
Ooh, severance.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
And they also sold drugs, so that helped.
$100,000 worth of sex toys. That's all of AdamandEve.com. All right, so they have $100,000 worth of sex toys. She is a runaway criminal, and he is an awful, terrible four-time divorcee with a daughter who calls herself Jessie, may or may not be the most mannish-looking human on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we're at,
right? So is Cindy Hindy. They're tied. Her and Jesse.
Well, he has a weird type for things like that, I guess. Yeah. Accomplices.
I think your options are limited when you're trying to find someone to sexually
assault
murder, people. Yeah, with you. You're like, whoever's into it, throw it up in the air and no one says anything. You're like, oh, bad joke.
So the sex toys and torture devices, they included what he referred to as his friends, which were bully whips, pulleys, leather straps, metal collars, leashes, and clamps, leg spreader bars, surgical equipment like knives and saws, dildos of all sizes, syringes, diagrams of how to inflict pain, and a homemade electric shock device. His most prized part of the toy box was his gynecological chair with a large mirror above it. He also had a camcorder pointed to it to record his torture sessions.
Okay, so it's not so much a toy box as it is a torture chamber.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking creepy that they call it Toy Box.
That's what he called it.
Yeah, that's why it's creepy.
They just rolled with it.
Yeah. In 1993, David created an audio recording of him reading an 11-page script meant to be played to women as they awoke inside the Toy Box. It begins,
"Hello there, bitch. Are you comfortable right now? I doubt it. Wrists and ankles chained, gagged, probably blindfolded. You are disoriented and scared, too, I would imagine. Perfectly normal under the circumstances. For a little while at least, you need to get your shit together and listen to this tape. It is very relevant to your situation. I'm going to tell you in detail why you have been kidnapped, what's going to happen to you, and how long you'll be here."
David and Cindy also like to show their new victims a video of them torturing a woman in the toy box while she screamed the entire time. Occasionally, they would have a close group of friends over for parties. In the transcript, David says,
"They know about our hang-ups. I don't have any problem with fucking a slave. You may be required to service them occasionally, but that's an easy one. For the most part, just fucking and sucking."
They don't get into the heavier stuff.
He also goes into detail about how they sit on the couch and watch as women are strapped into a metal frame and his male German Shepherd is brought inside. And you guys can figure out where that is going.
Yeah.
Should they pet the dog for a while?
Mm-hmm. That's, yep, exactly it. Okay. Don't read the transcript if you like the ending of that story.
Yeah, the dog comes in and sits down and enjoys the rest of the party with him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they have chips. They have a lot of appetizers and stuff.
Did they at least give him a Bud Light?
The toy box was equipped with rigorous security measures to keep the women from escaping. They would be chained to the wall, multiple locks put on the door, and a camera wired to the house so they could turn the TV on and watch the women while they are trapped alone inside the trailer. They also employed the use of sodium pentothal and phenobarbital to hypnotize the women and keep them in a state of confusion. This worked so well that only three victims that were let go remember any part of their time in the toy box.
That's so crazy. They all probably just think it's a nightmare because it's in there. It all happened. They just can't recall it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Damn. Have we said this guy's a fucking piece of shit yet?
Mm-hmm.
Fuck this guy.
Fuck this guy.
The transcript continues on and discusses victims being trained to speak properly, starting every sentence with master or mistress. David also attempts to make himself sound like a good guy, saying,
"Now later, I'm going to be asking you a bunch of questions. Since I'm going to be caring for your body for the next month or two or three, there are certain things that I need to know. I have prepared a questionnaire that I fill out with each new captive. Some of the questions are going to be embarrassing, but you should answer them truthfully and completely. You damn well better. I don't want to catch you in a lie. The questions will be in reference to your physical condition, any medical conditions I'd need to know about, medications, sex habits, sexual preferences, and childbirth you might have had, period dates, and so forth. Now your training has already started. Each time I ask you one of these questions on the questionnaire, there's going to be a proper way to answer it, which I'll tell you about in a few minutes. While going through the questionnaire, you're going to be strapped down on the gynecology table. Your feet will be in the stirrups and your knees will be pulled wide apart, with everything exposed. I like to keep a girl that way while she's answering the questions so I can examine and verify anything she might tell me which would affect her use as a sex slave. If you don't have any kind of medical condition, by all means, let me know. And we'll discuss it and we may make adjustments. Don't worry, turn you loose, but we may make adjustments."
Fuck this guy.
Yeah, fuck this guy.
He's a psychopathic piece of shit.
Yeah, he's fucked up. He's fucked up.
The transcript and the audio tape that were played for the women ends with, "Have a nice day."
There's something, like, just upsetting about that, like, he's just giving a command and then like, oh yeah, you're going to have a nice day.
Basically.
Yeah.
Marie Parker and her two children were evicted from their apartment on July 5th, 1997. With nowhere else to go, they borrowed a tent from David Parker Ray so they could stay at a campsite on the shore of Elephant Butte Lake, just north of David's home. Marie was a meth and cocaine user and was sold her drugs by Jesse, so she came to know the Ray family well. Her ex-boyfriend, Dennis Roy Yancey, also knew the Ray Hindi family as well and took part in Marie's death.
So who is this in relation to everyone? She's one of his known victims or someone?
Marie Parker?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a known victim.
Okay.
Of all three of them. All four of them, I guess, technically.
So she knows David Parker Ray. He mm-hmm. lends her a tent. Jesse is her friend, I'm guessing?
Drug dealer.
Jesse is her drug dealer.
And then I don't know how Yancey comes into the picture. He just happened to know.
That was her.
Cindy, Hindi, and Ray. And Jesse.
Well, was it her boyfriend?
Ex-boyfriend.
So they probably all partied together and did drugs together or something.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. So what happens to her?
Around July 5th, Jesse and Yancey are hanging out with Marie in a local bar, the Blue Water Saloon. This was a normal hunting grounds for them. They would often roofie a woman's drink and then offer her a ride home, telling her she was too drunk to drive. I'm not sure exactly where Marie's children were at the time. I'm hoping they weren't sitting in a tent at the shore of the lake, but I have no idea.
Yeah, I hope they're somewhere safe now, too, even. Or
yeah. So Jesse and Yancey do their usual song and dance, drugging Marie and then getting her into the car to drive her home. Instead of this, they take her back to the toy box. She's held there, raped and tortured by Ray and Hindi for 3 days. At the end of the horrifying 72 hours, David handed Yancey a rope and told her that they were finished with her and that Yancey has to kill her. He strangles her to death with the rope, and him and David take her body to a remote area and bury it. David tells Yancey he will kill him if he tells a soul about what happened.
Did they find this body?
No.
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 So how do they know this happened? Was this on
Yancey?
And did David confess to it later on?
No, he didn't really confess to much, but Yancey tried to take them out there, and then when the body wasn't there, he was like, oh, well, David probably moved it.
Yeah, I could see that.
Angelica Montano was an acquaintance of David and Cindy's and went to their home on February 17, 1999 to borrow cake mix. While in the home, David momentarily leaves the room and returns with a knife. Angelica is told she's being kidnapped, and she originally doesn't believe them until she sees Cindy pointing a gun to her. She's bound and stripped of her clothes and then strapped to David and Cindy's bed. She then has a metal dog collar and leash put on her, and electric probes placed on her breast and genitalia, and is shocked repeatedly. During this, she is also abused with multiple sex toys and forced to give David oral sex. After 3 days, she is taken and bathed, like a dog, in her own words, before being taken into the toy box. Here, David and Cindy strap her to the gynecological table, electrocute her, and rape her. Eventually, she is drugged and taken out into the desert, completely naked. A police officer came across her, and she reported the incident, but either she did not want to follow through with the report, or they never followed up with her. After Ray and Hindi were arrested, she files another report of the incident.
I don't even understand why she wouldn't want to make a report of that.
I've heard, like, super different reports. She either was terrified of police and didn't want to go to the station and fill out the report and be around a bunch of cops, or it was their fault. I'm not 100% sure which one to believe.
Okay. So, how long altogether did they have her?
So, probably around 5. Because they took her to the toy box. I'm not 100% sure. They had her in the house for 3 days, and then I don't know how long they kept her in the toy box.
Damn. Okay.
So on this one, I'm not sure of the date, but it's somewhere around mid-March of 1999. Cynthia V. Hill is working as a prostitute on Highway 66. Her pimp introduces her to David and Cindy, who are driving a large red RV. David offers Cynthia $20 for oral sex, and when she entered the vehicle, David pulled out a badge and told her she was under arrest for solicitation.
Just a random badge that he got somewhere, probably?
He was dressed like a cop.
Oh.
He was impersonating a police officer.
Okay,
so he pulls out the badge.
Cynthia is handcuffed, gagged, and then chained to a fixture in the RV. Her clothing is cut off, and a metal dog collar is placed on her neck. She is also put into shackles and has a leather mask with only a zipper over the mouth put over her head, presumably so she couldn't see where they were taking her. After arriving at David's home, Cynthia is taken inside the house, not the toy box, and chained to the bed. David and Cindy take turns raping her, and David ejaculates inside her and makes his dog lick it off.
What the fuck?
Cynthia is then placed into the leg spreader bar and raped with multiple dildos. Her breasts and genitals are shocked. The next morning, V-Hill is allowed to use the restroom before she is taken back to the bed and hogtied, duct tape placed over her mouth and eyes. She then has a rope attached to her, and she is lifted into the air by a pulley in the ceiling. The duct tape is ripped from her eyes, and she sees that she is being videotaped. David ties her legs open, whips her, and rapes her with dildos, taking photos of each one inside of her. Later in the day, the clamps are placed on her again, and she is electrocuted so many times she loses consciousness. Her torture continues for 2 more days until March 22nd. David leaves for work in the morning, and Cindy is responsible for watching Cynthia. When Cindy leaves the room to make a phone call, Cynthia notices the keys to her wrist shackles on a table near her. She uses her feet to knock the table over to get the keys. When Cindy hears the commotion, she returns to the room and begins to beat Cynthia.
Literally just like a movie. Like, trying to get the fucking keys. You almost have them. Fuck.
Even after being hit over the head with a lamp, Cynthia frees her arms and stabs Cindy in the neck with an ice pick.
Oh, yeah. She deserves it.
Yeah. Fuck yeah.
She's been stabbed multiple times. Okay, so she stabs her in the neck, and she's free of her shackles at this point, or?
Yeah, so once Cindy goes down, Cynthia calls 911, but is not able to talk because Cindy begins to get back up. Cynthia bolts out of the house and runs down the road, where a few vehicles pass her and do not stop. She eventually makes it to the front door of a woman's home, who lets her inside and calls the police.
So she's pretty lucky.
Yeah. I mean, besides the vehicles that fucking drove by her and didn't stop.
Yeah, for assholes.
Yeah, for real.
I don't get a couple of things. One, they've got this fucking trailer that they spent all this money on, and then they take everyone into the house. And then two.
From what we know, it was only like 2 people.
Oh.
Yeah, but you could see it worked out as a routine, though. Break them inside, then take them out to their toy box.
Eloquent.
Yeah.
So then the other thing. These women that they kidnapped like that, they didn't even use a stupid tape. his recording tape, right?
I have no idea. They didn't explicitly say that they played it or didn't play it, but the FBI found it, and that's why we know about it.
Oh, okay.
Because they really didn't. They weren't keen on discussing every single detail of all of this and reliving the event, so I don't know.
100% understandable on that.
Yeah.
All right, so she got away. Neighbor calls the police. Where do we go from there?
After Cynthia V. Hill is taken to the ER, police swarm David's property. They find evidence backing up Cynthia's story, and David Parker Ray and Cindy Hendy are arrested. Cynthia was never taken to the toy box, so police are unaware of the horror inside when Ray and Hendy are originally arrested. David and Cindy are taken to Truth or Consequences, where they are held on $1 million bail on 12 charges, including aggravated kidnapping, conspiracy, and aggravated battery. Once in jail, Cindy begins to talk, telling police of the toy box. By April 1999, over 100 officers storm the property and discover the extent of Ray's crimes.
How long has Cindy been with him at this time?
They got together in 97.
So 2 years, basically.
Basically.
Okay, so she confesses, tells him about the box, all that stuff.
Yeah, and when videotapes are discovered and watched, a new victim comes to light. Kelly Garrett is a former friend of Jesse Ray. On July 24th, 1996, Garrett leaves her home after a fight with her husband. She ends up at the Blue Water Saloon with Jesse, who roofies her and abducts her. She is placed in a metal collar with a leash and taken to the toy box. After 2 days of rape and torture, Kelly's throat is slit, and she is taken to a remote area and dumped on the side of the road. She survives, but no one believes that she'd been kidnapped and thinks she just ran away to use drugs.
And then slit her own throat.
I don't know. Yeah, apparently.
How was she found? Was it another passing police officer or...
No idea. She has no recollection of any of this happening to her. Her piece-of-shit husband thinks she's been out cheating on him and tells her to move back to Colorado, divorcing her not long after. Kelly is so drugged during her time in the toy box that she has no memory of the events, save for the nightmares she occasionally has. We only find out about her story after David, Cindy, and Jesse are arrested because her torture was videotaped. When the police find the tape, they release a photo of Kelly's tattoo in hopes that she will come forward and provide more evidence to convict Ray on. Her ex-mother-in-law sees the photo on the local news and recognizes it as Kelly, whose memory rushes back as soon as she is shown the evidence of her torture.
Oh, man, so she had this completely blocked out until it showed up on the news, basically?
Her mother-in-law saw her tattoo and was like, oh, shit, that's Kelly. And then Kelly had to have the police tell her what happened to her.
Oh, man. But they got him, though, for her, though.
Yeah, this is after his arrest, so he's already in custody. They find all of this shit, and they start figuring out that there's more women.
Including that shitty tape that he made.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Police also find a video of Marie Parker's murder, and Dennis Roy Yancey is arrested on second-degree murder and conspiracy to commit first-degree murder. When he attempts to take police to Marie's body, she is no longer there. Yancey believes that David moved her body shortly after they buried it, most likely so her death could not be proven if Yancey caved if they ever got caught.
That seems about right.
Jesse Ray is also arrested for kidnapping for sexual torture. Although the evidence that the toy box was a torture chamber, David's claims of over 60 victims are never corroborated because of the lack of bodies or victims willing to come forward. A journalist found that details many of the murders, but both Elephant Butte State Park and the lake are so large that the bodies have never been found or recovered.
Basically, he claims to have done this to up to 60 women, and he knew Elephant Butte State Park, so he could just go drop them wherever and no one would ever find them down a mine shaft or something.
Basically. Or in the lake. Some people say that he liked to cut a hole in people's stomachs so they would sink faster if he put them in the lake.
Ooh.
You gotta stuff rocks in there or it doesn't work.
Well, that's crazy.
It worked.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't found anyone yet, so have they, like, gone through and drugged the lake on that one?
I have no idea. Honestly, this is such a small town, I don't know if they would have the funds for that.
Makes sense. All right. So where are we now?
One of the FBI agents that was tasked with sketching the toy box is so overwhelmed by it that she actually committed suicide less than a week after she had to make the drawing.
Yeah, that's also, once that gets in your head, that's got to be almost impossible to get out.
Yeah, everyone kind of questioned why they let a woman do it.
Yeah, okay, so she kills herself because of everything she saw in this man's torture chamber.
Basically.
Okay.
So Jesse goes to trial and receives 2.5 years plus 5 years on probation. Yancey receives 2 15-year sentences in 1999 and is released in 2010 after serving 11 years. He violates his parole and is returned to prison to finish his sentence, which will be over in 2021.
So coming up here pretty quick.
Quickly.
the guy that killed one of a victim with David Parker Ray and tortured her, is getting out of prison.
Yeah.
That's not justice.
Yeah. Cindy Handy was charged with 25 felonies, but is offered a deal to plead no contest and testify against David Parker Ray and Dennis Roy Yancey in exchange for only 5 felonies and 36 years. Her original sentence was set at 197 years. Because of the law at the time of her sentence, Handy was only required to serve half her time. She was released on July 15th of this year.
No way.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago. Almost.
She was a torturer. So what is she doing now? Do we know any about anything, where she's going, what she'd be doing? How is she going to get a job?
So state officials say that because she was eligible for parole in 2017, but was held until 2019, the last 2 years of her sentence counted as her probation. She's 100% free. She has no probation, no anything.
No way.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Sex torturers don't just turn around. It's not like she's going to just be done getting off on torturing people.
Right? What the fuck?
Yeah, but she's out there. She's walking the streets.
Working at McDonald's.
That's absolutely insane.
Yeah. And before her arrest, while she was drunk, Cindy Handy actually admitted to willingly participating in the torture of victims because she enjoyed the adrenaline rush she got from it.
She's a sex torturer. That's how she got off. So creepy. So fucked up that she's out.
Yeah. Look at her picture. Memorize her face. We're, like, very close to New Mexico.
Don't buy a drink from her.
True.
But for real, we'll post a picture of her. So everybody can keep a lookout for this bitch.
Yeah. All right, so where are we now?
So David Parker Ray is set to have 3 separate trials, one for Cynthia V. Hill, one for Angelica Montano, and one for Kelly Garrett. Cynthia's trial was set to start on March 28, 2000, but after the jury selection, David has a heart attack and the trial is postponed. After some more delays, the judge decides abruptly to begin Kelly Garrett's trial, which was the one with the least amount of evidence, because Garrett's memory was still extremely foggy on the events. During this time, the trial for V. Hill also begins. V. Hill's trial ends in a mistrial because some of the jury members were apparently not super convinced that the women weren't there against their will, so they thought they were just...
They thought they were just, like, getting...
Yeah, they just weren't. They couldn't be 100% sure. So during the retrial, he's convicted, finally, on 12 counts for the crimes against her. Montano's trial never began because on May 7, 2001, she was rushed to the hospital with a serious pneumonia infection and died of heart failure only an hour later after arriving. She was 28.
Oh, man. So she didn't get her justice.
No. And she died very young.
That sucks.
To avoid the death penalty and to reduce the sentence for Jesse Ray, David Parker Ray took a plea deal. He pled guilty to all 3 trials and was sentenced to 224 years in prison. On May 28, 2002, after only 2.5 years of imprisonment, David Parker Ray suffered a massive heart attack and died.
Why? Why do they get off so fucking easy?
Yeah, I can only hope that that heart attack left him fucking suffering. I hope it wasn't a quick one. I hope it was a slow, painful death for this person.
Can you have a heart attack for like a week?
I hope.
That's what I'm hoping.
I don't know. I honestly, this is not fair. Like, there's nothing fair about that. This fucker is just, he should have rotted in prison. We should have fucking stuck a needle in his arm, actually. Like, that's,
Yeah, but he claimed that his time in prison allowed him to reflect on his actions, and it brought him back to God.
I was gonna say, did he find God?
They always find God. And he definitely found him and repented his sins, and...
He's still in hell.
Probably. Let's hope so, if it exists.
I'm upset by this. I'm really upset by this. I wanted him to get his asshole fisted by the biggest dude there. I wanted him to get a broomstick shoved so far down his throat that it came out his dick hole. Yeah, this guy deserves worse than what he got. I can't believe he got off so easy.
So he was there for a couple of years?
Two and a half.
2.5. He probably at least got some serious anal while he was in there.
He was in jail. He wasn't in prison.
What?
He was in jail. Yeah, because he was, through your trial, you stay at jail.
Oh.
So he was probably just in Gen Pop in jail.
I don't think he was probably even in Gen Pop. They probably had him secluded.
Yeah, that would make sense because he probably wouldn't have made it.
So he never got a fist in his asshole is what you're telling me.
No, probably not.
God damn it.
He never, on his transfer to prison, right? Like when he was heading to prison.
No, he was actually doing an interview with, he was on his way to an interview with the state police. So he went to one jail, to another jail, and then died.
No justice in this world. Anything, he's just
literally
dead.
Nothing.
He's good just came dead, and that's the good of it.
Yeah.
He's fucking out of the world.
He's dead. Cindy Handy is out and about walking the streets, and Yancey, who, you know, he's kind of culpable, but I think he was mostly threatened into it. He only got second degree, but he's still going to be out in 2021. So we're like, all of these people are basically free.
Remember their faces. Remember what they've done. Don't forget the horrible shit that they did to their victims. Like,
and the 60 victims, we don't know who the fuck else this happened to. We have 4 accounts of this, but that's it.
Do we think that any of that is him exaggerating, making shit up, boosting his numbers?
I doubt it. This guy seems like he knew pretty much what he was doing.
And I guess since the 50s, that's a long-ass time to kill people.
And he probably did some shit in Korea or whatever.
And he says, too, in the audio tape that he recorded, that he's been doing this for a long time and he's got it down pat. He knows how to keep you from escaping and what to use to drug you so you don't remember any of it, and what the best way to torture you is. And
he's a real upstanding citizen.
Yeah, he's something. All right, so is that it on the toy box killer?
That unfortunately is it.
What a shitty way in the story this guy fucking gets off dying.
Yeah,
fuck him.
Fuck him. Fuck this guy. He never really saw his justice.
None of them did.
What a depressing fucking story. Thank you, everybody, for listening to the Toy Box Killer episode. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, feel free to reach out to us at fourcornerscrimecast@gmail.com. That's F-O-U-R, cornerscrimecast@gmail.com. Also, drop us a line at our Facebook, facebook.com/fourcornerscrimecast. And our Instagram, @fourcornerscrimecast.
And try to control your sexual deviancies.
Please do.
And then join us next week. We're going to be covering Scott Lee Kimball out of Boulder or Denver, Colorado.
All right. Well, with that, have a good week, everybody.
See you next time.
Talk to you next week.